All right, the book of Ecclesiastes again this evening, and we began last week, and we'll cover reasonably quickly, I think, the principles found here, which are rather unusual considering our estimation of value in the day and age in which we live and the things that we place a premium on. To read the book of Ecclesiastes seems almost a contradiction to what we would classify, I suppose, as the great American dream. And it's important that young people especially get this. And my regret in life, I was telling somebody the other day, is not that somebody didn't tell me, it's that I didn't listen. You know? I had somebody preaching to me, I guess, and telling me this is what you ought to do and this is what you ought to think about and this is what you ought to make a priority. And I was so smart, I didn't listen. And had I listened, I wouldn't have needed the smarts because there was just some wisdom in all of that. And what better person to learn these vital truths from than someone who had the credentials? Someone who knows what they're talking about and has ample attestation to the fact that there was great wisdom and knowledge involved in this. And yet, as we began last week in the book of Ecclesiastes, he mentions the theme of his book, and it is vanity. All is vanity. You know, that would be something if you know, where you and I and we just lost our first job at Burger King, you know, and we walked out and got into our rusted out whatever it was and slammed the door and drove away and said vanity of vanities. That would be one thing. But this guy had achieved it. He had it all. You know, for us to be angry and upset as though the world's against us and we could do far better, you know, we can yell and scream if we want to, but Solomon had already attained it all. There was nothing left to attain. I have read the story of Alexander the Great, and Alexander the Great conquered the entire known world by the time he was 33 years of age. You know what his response was? He fell on his face and wept like a baby because there was nothing else left to conquer. What does that sound like? Does that sound like vanity of vanities? All is vanity. We seemingly spend our whole life looking for something that most of the time, far too late in life, we realize isn't there. And by then it's too late to go back and start over again. And so, to be honest with you, most folks spend the latter part of their days regretting that they didn't know what they needed to know early in life, but too old to make any great changes. So they just put up with it. And that kind of defines a lot of people that are up in years and have grabbed for the gusto, as the commercial used to say, and found out there was nothing there but emptiness. I read here this week that psychologists at the University of Rochester evaluated survey responses from 147 graduates, noting their achievements and level of happiness over a period of 2 years. People's goals were divided into two categories, extrinsic, things like wealth, fame, personal image, and intrinsic, for example, meaningful relationships, health, and personal growth. Achieving intrinsic goals led to higher self-esteem and a greater sense of well-being, the researcher's statistical analysis revealed, but in a snub for the American dream, attaining extrinsic goals of wealth and fame led to anxiety and deeper unhappiness. The idea here was that pursuing what we would classify the great American dream, not only did it fail to bring any happiness, it succeeded in bringing greater disappointment and unhappiness. I think sometimes the millennials in this day and time have the right idea in the sense that, you know, it's not about a good job. It's not about wealth. It's about staying home, living off your mom and dad till you're 26 or 27 or 40 and going out and changing the world by buying some poor guy a banana. And, you know, and I say that for simply this reason. That's not going to bring any happiness either. You see, you're following the carrot. It's just a different carrot. And the truth of the matter is the things that we would assume would bring happiness do not. I have another study here. I won't read it. But even those who follow after extrinsic things are unhappy. But those that follow after intrinsic things, which are things like, you know, being of value to self and things on the inside, are not necessarily happy either. And one study determined that when we follow either of those two goals and make that our pursuit, we become part of a group that are, in contrast to people that just kind of live the duh life, we're even more unhappy than people that don't have a clue, no matter what we pursue. So it's not a matter of, boy, I've heard people say it's not what you know, go out there and grab and get a hold of. It's what's in here. No, it's not. It's not what's in here. Okay. The smartest man that ever lived had it in here and in here. And here's what he said. Vanity of vanities all. That's extrinsic and intrinsic. That's what's outside as well as what's inside. There's nothing that brings contentment in this life. You say, preacher, that's just, well, it's because we need to change focus. Okay, I didn't say you couldn't be happy and satisfied and contented. As a matter of fact, I didn't say you couldn't be filled with joy unspeakable. How about that? And full of glory. But I am saying this. It's not something that you will achieve, whether inwardly or outwardly. It's something that God alone can provide. How do you know that? Because the man we're following over these next few weeks was the one that had everything you and I would say, there's happiness there. He had it. Okay? You say, well, I think you have to have a walk with the Lord. You've never had a walk with the Lord like Solomon had. Well, can we just spend a minute there? Is that all right? God shows up one night to Solomon and says, hey, you're going to be the king. Tell me what you want. And Solomon says, I don't want long life. I don't want riches. The extrinsic things. Give me wisdom. And God says, I'm going to bless you. When it all comes to pass, Solomon has that walk with God. May I remind you that later on in life, when he finishes the construction of the temple and he falls on his face and begins to pray, the power of God comes down in such a way that the priests can't even minister. They just have to stop and stand in their places because the power of God is so strong there. When's the last time God showed up like that in my prayer life? So somehow to look at it, I've heard people say, well, you know, Solomon was a good man, but it went to his head. That's your excuse. Solomon was a mile and a half ahead of all of us. But the man who was a mile and a half ahead of all of us spiritually as well as achievingly said at the end of his life, vanity of vanities, all. Is vanity. Meaning what? Not meaning that there can be no happiness in life, but meaning that you and I are not part of the process. You say, what are you saying to me? The big problem in the question of being happy is you. Okay, can I boil it down? And we'll spend some time proving this, I think, over the next few. You can't do anything to make you lastingly happy. Happiness is not something you achieve. It's something that God is willing to give you, if you'll allow it. But it's not something you work up to. It's not something you earn. It's not something... How many of you are saved because you're a good person? How many of you, God wouldn't dare let you go to hell because you're such a wonderful person and he saw such favor in you? And how many of you are saved because it had absolutely nothing to do with you? Okay, let me help you with that. That's the source and that's the path of meaningful living. That same thought. It's amazing. We think that God, who can give us everlasting life, who can give us that joy unspeakable, you just have to step aside here, God, because I know what's going to keep me happy through the course of my life. Sometimes we need to learn this aspect of hands off when it comes to living. Let God be God. We came through those thoughts last week and I had some notes I didn't read to you, but the people who we would assume to have been or should have been the happiest people in life never are. Never are. And it doesn't matter what you classify as necessary for life. We have, several in life that are pretty much common to all of us. Acquisition of wealth being one. And we looked at that last week. And we looked at that first wasted life goal. If you want to waste your life, Solomon will give you the goals that will help you achieve a totally wasted life. And number one was the acquisition of wealth. I understand that Howard Hughes was probably, when adjusted for inflation, the richest man that ever walked on the face of our planet, at least as far in the modern generation. And Howard Hughes lived the last part of his life as a recluse, never had any friends, never had anybody in his home. When he died, he was so emaciated that they could hardly imagine that he had lived as long as he had. His fingernails and his toenails had grown out almost like claws of a bear. He was unshaven and hair unkempt. He was just dirty and filthy. And some said they had to identify him by his fingerprints. Now, how would you feel if that guy lived next door to you? Well, wouldn't it cause your heart great thrill to every morning see him come out on the front porch and get his newspaper? You'd be calling the guys driving the wagon, saying this guy needs to go to the padded room hotel and spend some time there. He was the wealthiest man that walked the planet in our generation. It doesn't work that way. You can name any vocation. And you can say, boy, if that were your vocation, the truth of the matter is it's not in a vocation. Michael Jackson was, I think I read somewhere, worth around $600 million. That's a chunk of money. And the people who worked for him and worked with him said that in the last years of his life, he had to be the most unhappy person on the face of the earth, and his most often made statement was, I wish I could just live a normal life. Hey, he lived a normal life, but he wanted something else. The normal life didn't satisfy, so he went on to bigger and better things, and at the end he'd gone full circle, and all he wanted was to be right back where he started from, but that didn't make him happy either. It's an interesting story as you follow it. Jesse Livermore met with a group of 10 or 15 financiers in Chicago shortly before the Roaring Twenties broke out there and discussed how to accumulate and protect their wealth. The richest men in the United States, all of them with vast fortunes. And everybody knows what happened shortly on the heels of that was the Great Depression that took place. And all of them died miserable, wretched deaths, most of them by suicide. Money doesn't buy happiness. It just doesn't work that way. I read the story of Marilyn Monroe, who achieved Hollywood stardom and was the bright light and took her own life as nearly as can be determined with an overdose of pills. She never had happiness. I could mention one in our day and time would be Robin Williams, the funny guy who made everybody laugh and hung himself because he had nothing to live for. I begin to get the picture. We're not capable of generating happiness. We're not capable of finding happiness. Do you think if happiness could be found, someone would have at least drawn a map by this point in time? Why is it that everybody's still searching to find something that we all know it has to exist? We just don't know anybody that seems to be able to find it. And why in the world hasn't the guy that found it left a map? Well, because we go about it the wrong way. May I submit, just as we begin tonight, the understanding that we need, that is happiness like salvation, comes when I take my hands off and allow God to be all. And aside from that, there is none. Aside from that, there is none. You read the last few chapters in the book of 2 Chronicles and read the success that Solomon knew and the success that he had. I've got a note here. It says Solomon's provision for one day was 30 measures of fine flour and 80 measures of meal. You say, how much is that? I don't know, but I know this next one. 10 fat oxen. It took 10 cows a day to feed this guy and all of his entourage. You understand, that's living not high on the hog, but high on the cow. 10 fat oxen and 20 oxen out of the pastures and 100 sheep beside harts and roebucks and fallow deer and fatted fowl. That's one day's provision. This guy has dominion. It talks about the kings of Egypt and their trembling heart. They were the dynasties of the day, but they trembled before Solomon, because God made him great. And when it was all said and done, he writes this book for us, and his old age estimation was vanity of vanity, all is vanity. We looked last week at that wasted life goal number one. Now, I'm not saying let's just become, you know, abandon the world. Let's all quit our jobs and build a monastery, you know, whatever it might be. I understand that money is necessary to provide necessities in life. There's nothing wrong with that philosophy. Okay? How many of you like driving instead of walking? Okay, it takes money to buy a car. Okay? How many of you would prefer to eat, you know, oh, I better be careful with this, because I started to say how many would prefer to eat, you know, beef and pork over, you know, rutabagas and all that junk. But some would probably prefer that. But the truth of the matter is it takes money to buy food. There's no crime in that. We have to have some of those things to get by. The mistake we make is when we cross over and we sit down and we say, boy, you know, I had $1.45 last week and I got a Big Mac. But today I got $12 and I got a T-bone. And we assume then that it gets better as we acquire more. That's the mistake. Okay? Because it doesn't acquire more. It's nice to have. I should say this. It's nice not to have to eat a Big Mac every day of your life. It's nice every once in a while to step into that New York Strip or that porterhouse and enjoy that with all the fixings around about it. There's nothing wrong with that. But to follow that path, thinking that further down the road it will be even better. What are you saying? I'm saying when it comes to wealth, there is a place that needs to be clearly marked in your understanding in your life, and that is called this, enough. I have enough. When Jacob comes and he tries to overwhelm Esau because he's afraid Esau is going to kill him, he brings, you know how he divides the flocks and he's got the goats and he's got the sheep and he's got all these droves up there. And Jacob comes and he's hoping that what he assumes is going to be Esau's anger because of the way he treated Esau and stole his birthright, he assumes that Esau is going to try to kill him. So he puts these things out there to appease his elder brother. And when he comes, his brother says, what mean you by this drove? This is a bunch of junk. And he says, well, I wanted to make sure I obtained your favor. And so I wanted to send these to you. God's blessed me and I wanted to be a blessing to you. And you know what his brother says? I got enough junk. I don't need it. You know the happiest people in the world who are people who have enough? You say, well, one of these days I'm going to have enough. No, you're not going to have enough, because the higher you go on the ladder, the more rungs you add to the ladder. You need to realize there's a place where you got enough. You got enough. Wasted life goal number one was the acquisition of wealth. Why? Why? Because of the cyclical nature of wealth. What's worth a great deal today will not be worth anything tomorrow. Okay? How many of you have antiques? Okay? Can I tell you what antiques are? They're 20 years ago's junk. That's what they are. They're something that somebody back a little further worked very hard to obtain. And they probably weren't the fanciest or the finest. Looking over my crowd tonight, we're pretty much in the same boat. Our families went down to whatever the Walmart would have been in that day and bought whatever it was that they bought, maybe a bed or maybe a dresser, and it was a simple piece of furniture, and they probably paid, $1 a month for 10 months to buy it, and that was a fortune to them, and they put it there in the house. But unlike today, it was not mass-produced, and it was built to last, and so it did last. And then there came a day when their family was grown and it was just old junk. And they probably set it out in the barn. And they said, listen, let's just put it out there. We can store stuff in it in the barn. And it sat out there for 20, 25 years. And then somebody came along and said, And they packed it up and they took it home and they, rubbed on it and shined on it and fixed it up and fixed the nicks and the gouges, although those are character now. See, what would have kept you from buying it in the first place now costs $50 more. Because see that gouge right there? That was put in there by a wonderful old man years ago. And so now somebody bought it, put it in their house and paid 35 times more than it was ever worth. You say, well, what's wrong with that? Because in another 10 years, it'll be more junk. There's a cyclical nature to value in life. And we who are a little older remember the fads and the fashions and all that stuff that the young people are wearing today. And it's all brand new. Nobody ever thought of that. And the truth of the matter is, we were teenagers too. And you're wearing the same clothes we wore when we were teenagers. I know nobody's going to tell you that, but just hang on because you'll have teenagers someday and you'll know I'm telling you the truth. That's just the way that it goes. It's all cyclical. What are you saying? So I'm saying if you make wealth and its acquisition your goal in life, you'll never be happy. Because about the time you get enough, it'll all be classified as junk. And then it has no value. And so you throw it all away, and about the time you get it all cleaned out of your house and thrown away, it'll become valuable as antiques, and somebody else has bought it now. Solomon warned us that the acquisition of wealth is one good way to waste your life because of the cyclical nature. How do you place value on things? Value is transient. Value means nothing. And, everybody's hoarding now. We're getting ready to save up and all that good stuff. And people say, I'm going to invest in gold and silver. You can't eat gold and silver. Somebody gave me a list several months ago of about four things that'll be worth the most if absolute calamity came to the United States. And gold and silver aren't on them. You know what'll be worth a lot of money? Ibuprofen. Ibuprofen, they say, will be worth about 10 times its weight in gold. Why? Because it's the baseline for medicine if you're in bad shape. I don't suppose anybody's collecting ibuprofen. We're always behind the curve. We place value in things that really turn out not to be real valuable. So the acquisition of wealth, because of the cyclical nature, because of the transient nature of value, the shifting values that we place on things. Secondly, because if you labor to have wealth, you find yourself having another job, and that's laboring to keep wealth. Laboring to hold on to it. How do I keep somebody from stealing it? People who acquire great amounts of money, put some of it in the bank, then they realize, wait a minute, the bank's taking my money and they could get robbed. And so then they buy a big safe and put it in their home. And then they put in a $5,000 and a $25,000 security system. And then they hire armed guards to protect their home. And you know what they're doing? They never find that happiness. Because now you have to fight to keep it. Now you have to sit down and rewrite your will every 2 or 3 years because now you got two kids and your two kids have made a mess and they're in over their heads in drugs and you're not going to leave them that. And you're continually trying to figure out what to do with all this money you got. Now, it's wonderful to have enough. It is a waste of your life to try and have it all. because it will not provide happiness. You know who the happy guy is? It's not the guy that's got $20 million in the bank. It's the guy that needs $10 right now, and he's got $10 in his wallet. That's the happy guy. That's all it is. So when I approach life, if I learn anything from Solomon, it is this. Don't go overboard on the idea of acquiring wealth. Why? Because you'll acquire the junk. Sure as the world, it won't be worth what you thought it was worth. And you'll probably find yourself paying more and working harder just to protect what you worked so hard to get. There is no historical proof of enduring wealth or guaranteed acquisition and retention. What does that mean? That means you can go back 100, 150 years, name the richest people on the face of the earth, and you can follow their lineage on down and find disaster after disaster after disaster, and somebody worked hard to make it, and then the next generation lost it all. I remember a king who said, "Is this not great Babylon that I have built?" You know, and it was gone in a matter of a few hours. So the idea of acquiring wealth is a waste of life, particularly when we want to be happy. The second situation that we deal with, wasted life goal number two, is the acquisition of knowledge. Now, don't get mad at me. This is not my idea. You say, how dare you? Well, how dare he? Well, maybe not how dare he. He was the wisest man that ever walked the face of the earth, according to God. And the wisest man that ever walked the face of the earth says in verse number 12 of chapter 1, where we are here tonight, "I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I gave my heart..." When you give your heart, you've given your all. "I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all the things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith." What in the world was he saying? He's saying this, I tried to just gain the knowledge. Knowledge is good. Okay? Sometimes I think I get a rough, treatment because I bash sometimes college and knowledge, but the truth of the matter is, it's not bad to go to school. Okay? And it's not bad to go to college. But if you think it's going to make you happy, you're stupid. Okay? I've had people tell me, "Well, I'm going to go a lot further because I've been to school." Einstein didn't go to school. He didn't do too bad. You see, when it all boils down, it's not where you went to school, it's what you got up here. And just let me be honest with you, not everybody that's got degrees on the wall have any brains in here. Solomon looks, who is this guy? Well, he was the richest man that ever walked the face of the earth, so he has something to say about wealth. And now he's the smartest man that ever walked the face of the earth. He's got something to say about education. And here's what he said. It's not, don't ever go to school, just be stupid all your life. That's not what he said. If you think that's going to bring you happiness, if you think that's a guarantee in life for happiness, you're wrong. You're wrong. I read not long ago some of the smartest people in the world had jobs on Wall Street over the years, and now many of them are in prison because they were so smart that they knew how to, back to number one, acquire wealth, and they got caught. Wasted life goal number two is acquisition of knowledge. Why? I'll give you a reason. For every problem that is solved, there are new questions that arise that have to be answered. What do you say? Well, here's what I said about money, that if you get some and then you get some more and then you get some more, you tomorrow will need what? Some more. Let me tell you this thing about knowledge. If you get some knowledge, then you get some knowledge, and then you get some knowledge, and then tomorrow you're going to need more. You'll never get what you need to provide happiness. You say, well, I'm doing all right. Give it 30 years.
Okay.
I'll tell you what happens. All that stuff you've got up here, it just takes missing. Amen. I remember Dr. Ruckman years ago, I'll never forget it as long as I live, because when he said it, I thought, I'm going to remember that. He used to go into a crowd and he would stand and he had what they call, you know, question and answer period. And he promised to give you a Bible answer to any question within a minute's time. And I mean, there were Greek scholars there and there were guys that were there for the intent of tripping him up, and they'd ask him question after question after question, and he'd turn and wouldn't turn. He'd just quote a reference and say, look right here in this verse. And I remember him at Doc Noe's years ago, somebody asked him a question and he said, well, it's over here. And he quoted the verse and he said, and he had already quoted the verse, but he couldn't remember where it was. And he said this, he said, my mind is like a silo. And he said, all of my life, every time I've gained some knowledge, I put it in that silo. And he said, I got a little man that works for me. And when I need an answer, he goes to the silo and he brings the answer back. And then he said this, but here of late, he goes away and doesn't come back for days. And he said, he comes back every once in a while I'm trying to answer a completely different question with the wrong stuff that I need. And I wrote that down because that's probably the best description I've ever heard of for being over 55 or 60. So let me just tell you that I've got your degrees on the wall, okay? I've got mine on the wall. Can I tell you why we hang them on the wall? Because at 60, you're liable to lose them if you had them anywhere else. So hang them up there so every once in a while you can go by and go, yep, I are smart. Because it's not going to work here. You can't hold on to it. And if you could, can I tell you something? In 30 years, the world will have changed so much that all of your smarts will make you look like a dodo. You know what amazes me? You go to college, you buy your textbooks, and they tell you when you're finished with school, sell them quickly. You know why? Because they get new textbooks. You know why they get new textbooks? Because information and knowledge changes just that fast. So sad to say that by the time we get out of college, we're not as smart as a freshman. What a thought. Now, don't go out of here and say, Pastor Sal said, you know, don't go get a job. And he said, don't go to school. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you're planning on that making you happy, it's not going to work. And Pastor Sal didn't say that. The wisest man and the richest man that ever lived said that. It's wonderful to be those things, but not to be or to have those things so I can be happy. I read a book written, it's probably written 35, 40 years ago now, but it talked about the greatest generation in another aspect, and it talked about the upbringing of the greatest generation. Those young men and young ladies that went off to factories and halfway around the world to fight the war were for the most part rural farmers and ignorant people. And yet they are, without a doubt, historically the happiest generation that ever lived and occupied our country. You say, why? Because they weren't looking for happiness in money, and they weren't looking for happiness in education. They knew where to look to find it. And even though they sometimes got off the bus in the big city with no shoes on their feet, they knew where happiness was. Solomon knew where it wasn't, and so he wrote the book. And he calls himself the preacher. He gets real preachy. Why? Because you have to get preachy when you're raising kids who don't want to listen. And so Solomon's trying to help them out. Learning has merit, but knowledge alone changes nothing. If I take my knowledge and don't utilize it, it doesn't do anything. It just fills the brain. And we can sit back, as one man said a minute ago, is not this great Babylon that I have? We can sit back and say, ain't I smart? But doesn't mean anything. Smart people can become recluses. Smart people can become weird. Smart people can become antisocial. Smart people can become obnoxiously belligerent. Smart people can become, just being smart is no guarantee that you're going to be happy. Look at the drug culture in Hollywood. Why is it that people who can be 100 different characters, I mean, some of those people I've seen in documentaries can just throw something out. You know, you're a poor person, you know, okay. Now you're an Indian immigrant, and now then you're this. And in a matter like that, they just change personalities. You realize that's a talent? I remember Jonathan Winters. I mean, remember Jonathan Winters. Before Robin Williams, he probably was in line to be the smartest or the funniest man in the world. Jonathan Winters had to be admitted into mental institutions several times in his life because he had so many characters he would forget who he really was. What a thing. So what are you saying, preacher? I'm not saying don't aspire to any of these things. I'm just saying don't let them be your rule of life. Because that's what Solomon said. Learning has merit, but knowledge alone changes nothing. Proverbs chapter 4, as Solomon is talking to his son, he says in what he learned from his father, he says in verse number 4 of chapter 4, he taught me also and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing, not knowledge. Knowledge doesn't mean anything. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get understanding. I find myself praying more for understanding than probably ever before in my life. I read scripture that I've read time and time again, and I think, Lord, I don't understand. I want the understanding. It's eluding me. I need the understanding. I find that knowledge is nothing. Wisdom is the ability to take knowledge and implement it so that it glorifies God. And understanding is how to get from A to C effectively. Understanding gets you from just knowledge to wisdom. It's how to transport all that knowledge over here and to come up with a wise outcome. He said, get wisdom, but with all you're getting, get understanding. Wisdom's the principal thing. What does that mean? That means I understand these things and how they relate to one another. I understand the facts. I know what the facts and everything are all about. But wisdom gives me the ability to know that how that fits in the scope of there is a God who I am to serve and glorify. Somebody knows all the parts of the throat and all of the various things there that give us the ability to speak and the vocal cords and how they function and the nerves that feed the impulses from the brain to the vocal cords. And they might be able to describe for us in great detail how all of those things work together to give us the amazing, miraculous ability to speak. But it's an entirely another thing when someone stands and sings to the glory of God and our hearts are moved. Not by the vibrating of the vocal cords, but by the glory of God that shows up. That's the difference between knowledge and wisdom. And understanding is how to bring that about. You can be knowledgeable in a number of ways and never be wise. You can aspire to be wise and think that by gaining more knowledge, but it's not going to help you be wise. Wisdom can only be achieved through that little door of understanding. And it takes me from the knowledge that I've acquired. I know what the vocal cords are. I know how they work. I know the breathing. I got all the facts. But now then, with all my heart, I want to please God and I want God to be honored. There's the understanding. There's the understanding that brings us to the place of wisdom. So when he talks about knowledge, he doesn't say don't waste your time. He just said that's not the place to find happiness. Knowledge is good. Knowledge is wonderful. But the scripture is very careful to remind us in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse number 7, that in the last days that mankind will be ever learning. Ever learning. But never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. You know what the devil has done in our day and time? He's built a wall. He's built a wall called secularism between knowledge and wisdom. So that now we're cramming the heads of our young people full of all the knowledge and the facts. And by the way, the acquisition of knowledge just simply brings more questions. And so we're ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Knowledge is a good thing. Education is a good thing. A college education is a wonderful thing. A technical education is a good thing. There's no problem in gaining some knowledge, but recognize this. If you acquire that going, boy, this is going to make me, I'm going to be so happy. No. Can I tell you the difference between a good job and a bad job? 20 years. Same job. 20 years. What do you mean? I mean, it's new. It's exciting. I just got hired and everybody, they're all new and I'm excited about what I get to do. I've been doing this every day for 20, 25 years. Same thing over and over again. The difference between a good job and a bad job, 20 years, 25 years. The truth of the matter is I need to seek in my life to aspire not to have wealth, but to have enough. Not to have knowledge, but to have wisdom and understanding to get me to that place of wisdom. I'm wasting my life if I'm not careful. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3 and 4 says, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. I've been doing this not forever, but it seems like forever. And I'll tell you what I've noticed in Christians over the last... Christians don't need preachers anymore. We have the internet. We have the internet. And so who needs a preacher? Because, you know, the preacher is always in my face. He's always telling me something I shouldn't do or I'm not supposed to do. And I don't need that. I need some positive reinforcement. So there's a great Bible teacher on the internet. I get his blog and I watch his podcast and he's just really uplifting to me. Okay, the guy's living on welfare in a one bedroom apartment and he's got his Radio Shack amplifiers and stuff and he's making his videos so you can watch it. The reason he's not pastoring, nobody wants him because he's a flake. You say, are you just guessing? I could name 15 names, I wouldn't, but I can name 15 names. I know that's the case. I've got a little place, we hang a sheet across the kitchen. So I've got a backdrop there. You know. And I can just come on and go, you know, I want to teach you some things out of this. And you know, listen, the guy, you can hear his kids if you listen carefully in the background screaming and throwing blocks in another room. Listen, that's funny, except there's some great doctrinal changes coming about today because of some flakes. And I use that because that's the kindest word I can use. You say you shouldn't speak ill of anybody. That's frosted flakes, corn flakes, and religious flakes. Everybody's got an idea. Okay? And so what we do is we sit down and we watch and we go, oh yeah, that just makes such good sense. That's perfect. And I tell you what I really like. He didn't tell me I needed to change my life. I've had people in the last 5 years, I've said, where do you go to church? They said, well, you know, Pastor so-and-so on the internet's my pastor. Let me help you with that. Okay. When you want to get married, call him. Okay. You need somebody to bury you? Call him. You've got to go to the hospital? Don't call me. Call your pastor. Amen. Now you didn't like that, you can go get you another guy off the internet. You know what, you and I, listen, if your mother had just given you a book on how to grow up, huh? Or the video series, or maybe got you a podcast. She could have stood there, put the curtain up behind her in the kitchen, and I'm going to tell you how that, this is, you'd have been a disaster. You know what you needed growing up? You needed somebody to put their finger on your face and say, you stink, and you're doing the wrong thing, and you're just a disobedient little brat, and it's time you got yourself in gear, because if you don't, you're not going to, that's what you need every once in a while. The more I live, the more I appreciate a mother and a father who just put me in my place and then stood on me. Because if they'd have got off, I'd have got up and ran away. That's just the way it was. You're not going to make it in life without some help. It's unusual to find that the time's going to come they won't endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts. Can I put lust for you by definition in two words? I want. That's lust. I want. So we have replaced today sound doctrine for what I want. Can I tell you why the contemporary church is so attractive today? It's what everybody wants. See? I can go in and listen to the music and, you know, do the, whatever it is, the jazzercise or the Jesusercise or whatever it is, and I can come out and turn on my radio and it can go, I mean, the words are changed, but the beat and the music's all the same, and I just feel good. I feel good about Jesus. Because that's the kind of music we sing. Can I tell you that's why drug addicts take drugs? Because they feel good about drugs because of the music they listen to, and you're listening to the same music. We've just changed the words to protect the guilty. Hooked on a feeling. I think that's where we are. Wasted life, goal number two, is acquiring knowledge. Why? Well, because once you get it all figured out, once you come to the place where you've overcome or you've broken the mold or you've attained the overwhelming favor of all your peers, you've conquered the error and you now stand as the individual above individuals, the one who you've got the Nobel Prize. Okay? Can I tell you what happens? Life's never the same again. Because there's no more goals to achieve. You say, why would you say that? Because I've read the testimonials of people who've achieved the tops in their career field. And I tell you what they say, I was happier when I was chasing the dream. I was happier when I was trying to get there than I was when I got there. So, wasted life number one, spend your life trying to be rich and wealthy. Number two, spend your life just dependent on knowledge and learning. Number three, let me finish the chapter and we'll drop on down just for a minute here tonight. He said in verse 14 of chapter 1, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. In other words, there's a limit to what you can do with your learning and with your wealth. I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than they all, or all they, that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly, because you find they're twins. And when one moves in, then the others move in as well. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. What are you saying, preacher? Let's just all be dumb and poor? No. Let's live a life where we know what is necessary to provide what we need in life. And we're satisfied with enough. Why? Because more is just more. It's not happiness. Let's gain some knowledge. Let's learn about our world. Let's learn about our existence. Let's learn how to do things better. Let's learn those things that can be learned. But let's not make it a goal and a God. Because for every question, I say again, there are 10, for every answer, there are 10 more questions. And if you don't believe that, ask a first grade teacher. And they can tell you that's the nature of human beings. I commune with my own heart, saying, I'm come to greater state, have gotten more wisdom than they all that have been before me in Jerusalem. This is an achiever. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom. And not only did he have it, he was experienced. He knew how to handle it. I gave my heart to know wisdom, to know madness and folly. They come together. I perceive that this also is a vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth happiness. Right? Sorrow. So he's covered two parameters for us that would make us, in this world in which we live, an outcast if we were to vocalize what he just said in our own life. If you went into your job tomorrow and you said, listen, I don't believe in money, and it's just not, your boss would go, good, I'm going to take away part of your salary. No, he'd think you're nuts if you tried to make knowledge and you went in tomorrow and said, well, you know what, I'm just going to forget it. I'm just going to be stupid. The world would look at you like you were stupid. So there is a need to have these things, but it is, in Solomon's understanding, not the focal point. Because it will not, it cannot, it has not, and regardless of what you believe in your heart, it won't for you bring happiness. And so a life that believes that happiness lies through door number one or door number two is a loser. Because it doesn't come there. Let's go to chapter number two. Chapter number two says, I said in mine heart, go to now. I like that. Go to now. That's like, get a grip. Let's deal with this. Go to now. I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. Wasted life number three. Wasted life goal number one is try to be rich and have lots of money. Acquire wealth. Number two, be really, really, really smart and acquire knowledge. Number three, grab for all the gusto you can get the pursuit of pleasure and frivolity. Okay, now at every point, I'm going to have to come back and do this because I see people go, there's nothing wrong with enjoying life. Okay? There's nothing wrong with enjoying the things that are enjoyable in life. There's nothing wrong with enjoying things that are pleasurable to us. There's no crime or no sin in that. But I want you to understand, those are all dead-end streets. And if you're going to travel that path to find happiness and joy, it's not going to get you there. It's vanity of vanities. You know what Solomon does in Ecclesiastes? He traces the map. And he says, well, you know, a lot of people go down this road and then they turn here and oh, don't get you there. Well, and then some go down and they go this way and then they go this way and they go, oh, doesn't get you there. You know what he's doing? He's telling us that things that we esteem as sure secrets of success don't get you there. So, what am I to do? Well, he said, I tried the area of wealth. I had more wealth than anybody that was before me or after me. I tried the area of knowledge. I was wiser than anybody before or after me. And I tried pleasure. Wasted life goal number three is to spend your life in pursuit of pleasure or frivolity, thinking that will provide me. Won't do it. Won't do it. I read somewhere today one of the stars of the 50s made the statement when she was at the top of her game, the most desired starlet in Hollywood films. And she said, "I never knew unhappiness till I became famous." What a statement. What a statement. I never knew unhappiness till I became famous. You watch these people running around with the paparazzi and all the cameras. Don't you know that's a lot of fun? Now I know there's some silly people here tonight and you're thinking, "Oh, I wish everybody tried to take my picture." 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, through your bedroom windows and your bathroom windows, stopping your car. That's what you want? Well, no, what you want is to do it your own way. It doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. Some of these people raised as child stars, there's another tragedy there. Childhood stars grow to adults, and most of them don't live to be over 30 because they can't handle the junk. Wasted life goal number 3 is pursuing pleasure or frivolity. Why? Because fun and laughter are a momentary escape at best. Somebody said, "I laughed till I cried." You know what they mean? There's an end of laughter. It doesn't go on forever. We may be able in our mind to go back to me, family was always getting together talking about all the weird people in our family. And there was always a great source of humor in that. But it didn't endure. It was just for the moment. We would talk about somebody and say, "Remember, boy, wasn't she silly?" And we'd laugh, and then we'd remember she's buried down here now in the cemetery. So even in all that laughter, there's nothing lasting. All that frivolity. Do you ever notice when you get done at Cedar Point after 12 hours of, well, after 45 minutes of riding rides and 11 hours and 15 minutes of standing in line, do you ever notice when you get in your car and you're just exhausted and you're just worn out, you say, "Next time I come, I'm going to..." It never satisfies. It's never enough. Always more. You know why they put in a new, exciting ride every year? You know why they can charge, I don't know what it is now, Disney's over $100 a day, I understand. You know why they charge $100 a day to get in? Because people will pay it. You want to see how sad our world is? We'll spend $100 and more a day. By the time you figure food and motel and transportation, there are people spend $200 to $300 per day to take a trip to Disney. If you haven't figured that out, that's a lot of money in the course of a week. And they'll come home and they'll have their little trinkets that they'll hang on the wall, and then they'll remember being there. But it doesn't provide them happiness. I've had people tell me the bad part about going on vacation is having to come home. Welcome to Ecclesiastes. Next floor, despair. What are you saying? I'm saying, listen, there's nothing wrong with going there. I had the privilege of going to Walt Disney World with Mark and Liz Rogers right after they got married. And Mark is so stoic. How many of you know Mark? Stoic is a good word, right? Mark is just stoic. And Liz is a goofball. And opposites attract. And so that's why they're together. But you've never lived till you've seen them in line at Disney World because of the difference in reactions. It was just, I enjoyed that more than riding the rides, to be honest with you. Listen, there's some enjoyment in frivolity. There's some enjoyment in pleasure. There's nothing wrong with those things. And God created and allowed us the ability to experience those things. And so don't go out of here and say, Pastor Pascal said I should be stupid and poor and never have any fun. That's not what he says here. He's saying if you're doing that to have a happy, good life, you're wasting your time. Because that's not where it comes. Fun and laughter, momentary at best. Tears, sadness, and true purpose are far, far deeper than where laughter comes from. Do you ever find somebody laughing at some silly little story, and then with just the mention of a name or an event, the tears begin to flow? Heartache lies far deeper than where we keep our joy and our happiness and fun. The Bible said, even in the midst of laughter, there's sorrow. So if I spend my life thinking that, boy, this is where all of the booze and the drugs and everything else fit in. You know why they say it's an escape? It's an escape. An escape from what? An escape from reality. May I tell you that if the only way you can be happy is to escape reality, you haven't got a life. If happiness cannot be found within the scope of reality, we just might as well all drink the Kool-Aid. Because there's nothing of any value in this life. But that's the mantra of the day and age in which we live. I said of laughter, verse number 2, it is mad. And of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom. In other words, I didn't quit. I still wanted to serve God. I'm just trying to find some happiness. So I figured I'd add a little mirth. I'd add a little joy, a little fun. And to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men which they should do under heaven all the days of their life. You know what he said? I just wanted to find out what was of value in life. And it wasn't that. Wasted life number 1. Wasted life number 2. Wasted life number 3. And then wasted life goal number 4. And this refers back to 1 in a sense, but it has a little different slant. And wasted life goal number 4 is just chasing the dream or running the rat race. Look what he says. I made. Look at these words here. I made. I builded. I planted. You see these words? Verse 5, I made. Verse 6, I made. Verse 7, I got. Verse 7, I had. Verse 8, I gathered. Look at verse number 9. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Here's what he said. I got it all together. You see, maybe the problem was if you had money, but didn't have any knowledge, then you were destined to be a failure. Or maybe if you had knowledge, but didn't have the money, then you were destined to be a failure. Maybe if you just had fun and didn't, you gotta have them all. So I got them all. And guess what? All of them together didn't bring happiness. This is a morbid thought, preacher. You should teach something that would lift us up. Well, I think it will when we're all said and done. Sometimes to learn truth from Scripture, you have to unlearn what we've been so stuck on all of our lives. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was the portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on all the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and a vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. What do you mean, preacher? Hey, you can set your mind to do something nobody in the world's ever done, to be great, to change the world. And it won't bring any happiness. I remember the words of one of the men that walked on the moon, who came back to the earth and could not deal with the fame of what his walking on the moon had done, and he became an alcoholic. And he made the statement when he went to NASA, he said, "They taught us how to walk on the moon, but they never taught us how to live on earth." You know what he was saying? "I've done more than any of you have ever done. I've gained notoriety. My name is forever etched in history. It didn't make me happy. Didn't work. Didn't secure it. No, Virginia, there is no Santa Claus. There is no happy ending at the end of a misappropriated life." You say, "Well, you've got to try real hard." You know what? You can try real hard to do the wrong thing and it'll still mess your life up. You can try real hard to acquire money and you may be successful more than anybody that is before you. But I tell you, before you begin going down that pathway, at the end of it all, you will not be happy because it doesn't lie there. You can go to schools until they name a college after you. You can become the smartest man that I was watching Hawking the other day, ridicule God. And I thought, what does it take? All you've got is a brain. And that's all you've got. And you can sit there in that chair and you can ridicule God and you can mock the concept of God. And one of these days you're going to stop breathing and you're going to find yourself burning in a lake of fire. And you're going to come from the lowest position a human body can occupy on this earth to the lowest place in a lake of fire. You say, "Why is he that way?" I'll tell you why he's that way. He's bitter. And I'll tell you why he's bitter. Because he never found happiness. He never found happiness. Somehow in all of his search for knowledge, he didn't find the happiness he thought would come. When he acquired the accolades, God touched him and put him in a wheelchair. What good is it? You say, "Well, I heard him talk." No, you didn't. You heard something talk for him. He can't talk. He can't feed himself. He has to wear diapers like an infant. What a great mind. Is that what you want? Would that make you happy? Solomon said it didn't come. It wasn't there. I had it all. Wasted life goal somehow just doesn't pay off when we believe that it's all going to come by just having frivolity and fun or education and knowledge or massive amounts of money. It doesn't come because that's a misappropriated life. Let me help you. You want to be happy? You got to go down the right road. You got to go down the right road. The wrong roads and the testimonies are ample. You can turn on your television. You don't have to watch a news broadcast for more than 20 minutes to find somebody who walked down a road that you thought would have made them happy. And now they're in jail, or they just shot somebody, or they just killed somebody, or they just lost their career. Why? Wrong road. Bob Jones Sr. used to preach at Bob Jones University to the students, and one of the things he always said was this: the right road always leads out at the right place, and the wrong road never leads out at the right place. Learn not to ruin your life before you ruin your life. Somebody said experience is the best teacher. Baloney! The Scripture's the best teacher. The guy that said experience is the best teacher is the guy that ruined his life, and he wanted to have an excuse for the fact that he ruined his life, as though somehow his calamity made him a better person. Baloney. Some of you young people got a Bible in your hand that'll help you avoid the pitfalls of life and give you happiness and joy in your later years, and you don't have anything to do with it. You turned your back on it, and you bought into the thoughts of this world, and you said, I'm going to have that, and it's going to make me happy, and I'll tell you what it's going to do. It's going to make you miserable by the time you're 40, and you'll never be able to change. Why did you say that? Because the right road leads out at the right place. And the wrong road never leads out at the right place. So he tried what? He tried everything that you and I would hold in great value. Can I say this? Stuff outside can't fill emptiness inside. And all that stuff is outside. And it may be entertaining, and it may make us smile, and it may make us laugh, and it may make us cry. We laugh so hard. It may bring us a good feeling on the outside. You may get goosebumps on the outside. But it has no ability to do and register anything on the inside. If you're empty inside, you need a filling inside. And Solomon is the wise man that grasps that. Wasted life is trying to provide with all of these things combined, or with one of these things in exclusion of the others, or any combination thereof. He said, I've done it all. I tried it all. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. He says in verse 12, I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? You know what he realized? Life is just one big whirlpool. Around and around and around we go, and where it stops. No, you realize this is not the first generation to desire money or education. Fun didn't begin with this generation. It's been around ever since Adam and Eve walked out of the garden. And it's gone around and around and around and around. You may ruin your life, but you won't ruin your life in a way that 1,000 other people haven't ruined their life. You're not going to be the devil's trophy. I heard somebody say one time, you'll ruin your life and you'll be on the devil's trophy case. You're not that valuable. You're just a rerun. Okay, there have been 1,000 people ruin their life the way any one of us could ruin our life. I'm not trying to tell you, here's what I'm trying to tell you, happiness doesn't lie in any of that stuff. Happiness lies from what can fill inside, not outside. There's nothing wrong with knowledge. There's nothing wrong with some money. There's nothing wrong with having some fun. Nothing wrong with any of those things, but I need to realize at before departure, this plane doesn't land there. I may want with all my heart to go to some place and I get on the airplane, but if the plane doesn't go there, I'm not going to get there. And none of these planes get you to the place of happiness. So you can convince yourself that you're going to make it, but you're going to end up right where Solomon was. I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. He said, I did realize that wisdom's better. If you had to choose one, it's better than fun. So young people, when you get to be a teenager and you just want to have fun, just remember, the smartest man that ever lived who had both said, I realized in my life that having some brains is a whole lot better than having fun. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. You know what he does? He comes to the realization that one thing makes us equal. And that's our funeral. This is a big thing today. You know, we want the world, everybody needs to be equal. You know, we need to treat everybody equal. Listen, there is no fairness in life. Okay? In case you haven't figured it out, let me let you in on something I figured out a long time ago. There's a lot of people a lot smarter than I am. Okay? And it wasn't because somehow I was deprived as a child. Okay? The best I can be is not where a lot of people are. Okay? You say, well, there's no limit. You're nuts. Okay? I'm just trying to help you out. There is a limit for you and you've exceeded it. You say, well, you know, I think everybody has the... No, no, listen, you think I could play basketball against a guy that's 7'3" tall? And I'm going to be the star? He would stuff me through the net. Okay? You say, well, yeah, but I just... Listen, and if that doesn't work, maybe you are good now. Give it 10 years. You're fighting a losing battle. You say, well, I'm the best. You're the best today. Okay? In 10 years from now, there'll be people walk all over you doing whatever it is you do. So if you're trying to grab for all the gusto you can get, let me tell you this, it's not going to satisfy. It's not going to work. It's not going to be there. But when we get to the funeral home, we're all equal. Someday somebody's going to cut your hair, put a little makeup on you, take some super glue and glue your eyes shut. Depending on how your jaw's configured, they'll put some glue inside your mouth and glue your lips shut. How about that? Huh? That's how you end up. You ready? Huh? They're going to put some clothes on you and they'll have to cinch it in the back. They'll make it look like it's tailor-made, but that's because it's all pinned up in the back. And somebody will come in and look at you and they'll touch you and you'll be just as cold as ice and just hard as a lump of clay. And nobody, listen, they may say they just look good. They're lying. Okay? I have never seen a dead body look good in my life. You know, can you imagine? So this looks so good. I'm going to take it home with me. We're going to keep grandma in the corner there. That's not going to happen. I'll tell you what dead bodies look like. They look dead. And that's where we all end up. Somebody said the greatest place of equality is the graveyard. There it is. There it is. We're all equal at our funerals. So understand from verse number 12, there's a cyclical nature to all human endeavors. Meaning what? It just goes in circles. Well, I'm going to be successful. Okay, you can be successful, but you're going to be a failure too. And then whatever you've built, somebody else is going to take and run it into the ground. And that's just the nature. Okay, round and round we go. Our common accomplishment shared by all mankind is we die. You get to Genesis chapter number 5, I think it is, and you read so-and-so lived so-and-so and begat sons and daughters and he died. And so-and-so lived so-and-so and begat sons and daughters and he died. You come down through that, every verse ends with and he died, 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 and he died. Can I tell you where your story ends? And he died. And he died. You say, well, I want to be remembered. Don't listen. Don't pat yourself on the back. Okay? The last memory people have of you is some cold dead corpse laying in a casket. It'll be pity. And then life will go on. Life will go on. You say, well, I don't think life has to be like that. I don't think it has to be like that, but I think it is like that. I think that you can't get happiness out of that. I remember my father when he retired. He worked for the federal government and did some things that were needful and necessary and was successful in his career. And I remember when he retired, I came to visit him and we went one day and went back out to the base. It was the largest military installation in the United States where he worked. And we drove on to the base. He said, let's go over here by the office. And we drove over by the office and we got out of the car and we walked up the path that he'd walked up for probably 25 years to a unit that he had built and constructed and made. We opened the door and went in and everybody said, hey, how you doing, Chief? How you doing, Chief? Hey, how you... And then they went back to work. And I saw it in his eyes. And I'll tell you what his eyes said. I don't fit here anymore. They don't need me. You think it's going to provide you with happiness? You want happiness? Happiness is there. Happiness is here. And it's nowhere else. Set your affection on things above and not on things of the earth. We're going to follow through and cover this a little more next week, but remember, there's good ways to waste your life and ruin your life, and people do it every day, but we figured three of them out now. Don't go that route, all right?